ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 33, Activities of Kapila Day, Text 14. Translation. She, this means Devahuti, she began to bathe three times daily, and thus her curling black hair gradually became gray. Due to austerities, her body gradually became thin, and she wore old garments. Srila Prabhupada's purport. It is the practice of the yogi, brahmachari, vanaprastha, and sannyasi to bathe at least three times daily, early in the morning, during noontime, and in the evening. These principles are strictly followed even by some grihasthas, especially brahmanas, who are elevated in spiritual consciousness. Devahuti was a king's daughter and almost a king's wife also. Although Kardama Muni was not a king, by his yogic mystic power, he accommodated Devahuti very comfortably in a nice palace with maid servants and all opulences, but since she had learned austerity, even in the presence of her husband, there was no difficulty for her to be austere. Still, because her body underwent severe austerity after the departure of her husband and son, she became thin. To be too fat is not very good for spiritually advanced life. Rather, one should reduce, because if one becomes fat, it is an impediment to progress in spiritual understanding. One should be careful not to eat too much, sleep too much, or remain in a comfortable position. Voluntarily accepting some penances and difficulties, one should take less food and less sleep. These are the procedures for practicing any kind of yoga, whether bhakti yoga, jnana yoga, or hatha yoga. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Utale Shimati Bhakti Vedanta Samniti Namani Namaste Sarasate Deve Gauravarik Charani Nivishesha Shunyavari Paschachade Sajarani Om Angyana Timarantasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chaksul Mitum Chaini Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Panchakalpa She began to bathe three times daily, and thus her curling black hair gradually became gray. Due to austerities, her body gradually became thin, and she wore old garments. So she was situated like a queen, daughter of a king, and also mentions that although Kardama Muni was not a king, a kshatriya, still by his mystic power he gave her those amounts of opulences. Didn't matter to her. She was trained in austerity, and so she began to practice this tapas, ugra tapas, severe austerities. So described her appearance changed. She didn't take good care of her hair anymore because she bathed three times a day. I guess that it became lost its color, became grayish and matted. So we spent a long time fixing it up. She wore, dressed herself in old clothes, rags, and she became skinny and thin. So these are some of the consequences of her austerity. So austerity is important. Prabhupada talks about being thin is important too. We have a problem in America because as a great personage in the realm of fashion said, it is impossible to be too thin or too rich. So people want to have the opulence of richness and also thinness at the same time. So thin is big in America, yet it's become a fat nation. Americans are now the fattest people in the world. I guess that was formerly held by, a title was held by the Germans, especially from the South, South Germany, but now been surpassed by Americans who eat too much and of course don't exercise, being carried around everywhere by fat vehicles. These urban assault vehicles getting heavier and heavier. So austerity is not a virtue. Anymore. It's also your patriotic duty is to go out and buy, to spend money, to be a consumer. The response to what can we do to show people, what is the patriotic response to terrorism, is to show that it will not disturb the economy and you will still spend money and consume. Apparently the whole health of the world economy depends upon the continuing appetite of America for buying, to be a consumer. Well, austerity means not consuming. So it's very subversive. You want to actually deliver a blow to the system. People are against the system, they're against globalization, all these things, they have to become austere. So these things are good for spiritual life. When become free from suffering in the material world. Tapasa brahmacharyena shamena cha damena cha tyagena satyaso chabhyam yamena niyamena va. These are things that austerity performed by the body, words, and intelligence. Deha vag bhuti jam dira. This is in the sixth canto, first chapter. Maharaj Parikshit's has been the hellish planets have been described. So how are people supposed to become free from the suffering in the material world? Because we see they suffer when they perform their sinful activities, but they go right back and do them all over again. Like an elephant's taking, goes in the water, then comes out, rolls in the dirt. So people, they suffer. There's paryaschita, they atone. Some atonement is there. And then, again, they commit sinful activities. So merely atoning is not enough. What do you have to do? So tapasya, brahmacharyena, it says, the whole To concentrate the mind, one must observe a life of celibacy and not fall down. One must undergo the austerity of voluntarily giving up sense enjoyment. One must then control the mind and senses, give charity, be truthful, clean and unviolent, following the regular principles and regularly chant the holy name of the Lord there. Thus a sober and faithful person who knows the religious principles is temporarily purified of all sins performed with his body, words, and mind. These sins are like the dried leaves of creepers beneath a bamboo tree, which may be burnt by fire, although the roots remain to grow again at the first opportunity. Of course, he goes on further, but at least it begins with this tapa. Tapa is explained in the Smriti Shastri as follows. Manasas chindriyanam cha aikagriyam paramam tapaha. Doesn't say where it comes from, just in the Smriti. Complete control of the mind and senses and their complete concentration on one kind of activity is called tapa. Prabhupada says, our Krishna consciousness movement is teaching people how to concentrate the mind on devotional service. This is first class tapa. So, to succeed in devotional service, this is a requirement. Tapa by itself will not necessarily deliver you from the material world. In fact, Hiranyakashipu, as a great materialist, showed how tapa is necessary to be a successful materialist. Anyone who becomes successful, even in fruitive work, is austere, because they're concentrated in achieving their goal. So they perform austerities, otherwise known as a workaholic, for example. 80 hours a day at the law firm, 80 hours a week at the law firm, 80 hour weeks is austerity. And people do this. They don't have... Of course, this is sometimes called bhoga tyaga, alternating renunciation and sense gratification, because as soon as they get a moment, they plunge into sense gratification. But nevertheless, austerity is a necessary condition for a success in devotional service, but not sufficient by itself. But necessary to practice austerity, so that controlling of the mind and the senses and the concentration of the mind and the senses on one thing. Eka abriyam, agriyam, aikagriyam. On one thing. This is also called vyavasatmika buddhi. It's the necessary requirement for success, not to be scattered, but to be concentrated, so that anything that is unnecessary for one's purpose is eliminated, so that all effort can be put in one place. So Prabhupada says, our Krishna consciousness movement is teaching people to concentrate the mind on devotional service. In the Bhakti Marg, first Prabhupada has a discussion about Brahmacharya for some while, and he says, in the Bhakti Marg, the path of devotional service, one must strictly follow the regulative principles by first controlling the tongue. Sevan Mukhe Hi Jiva Dao Swayam Eva Sparatyadaha, the tongue, Jiva, can be controlled if one chants the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, does not speak of any subjects other than those concerning Krishna, and does not taste anything not offered to Krishna. If one can control the tongue in this way, brahmacharya and other purifying processes will automatically follow. It will be explained in the next verse that the path of devotional service is completely perfect and is therefore superior to the path of fruitive activities and the path of knowledge. Quoting from the Vedas, Srila Viraraghava Acharya explains that austerity involves observing fasts as fully as possible. Tapasa na shakena. Sri Rupa Goswami has also advised that atyahara, too much eating, is an impediment to advancement in spiritual life. Also in Bhagavad Gita 6:17, Krishna says, yuktahara viharasya yukta chetasya karmasu yukta swapna vabhotasya yogo bhavati dukkha. He is temperate in his habits of eating, sleeping, working, and recreation can mitigate all material pains by practicing the yoga system. So the next verse, by the way, is the real answer. He mentions all these things, tapasya, brahmacharyena, samenacha, then kechit kivalaya bhakta. But there are some, kechit means some people, not everybody, who by practicing unalloyed devotional service, kivalaya bhaktya, vasudeva parayanaha, to Lord Krishna, they're completely attached. Prabhupada says, when it says Vasudeva Parayanaha, to Vasudeva Parayana means completely attached, only to such service without dependence on austerity, penance, cultivation, knowledge, or pious activity, then Agham Dunvanti Kartsnena Nihara Iva Bhaskaraha. Then all sinful activities are completely destroyed. Kartsnena means completely, without the chance that they will come back again. The other things, tapasya brahmacharyena, by themselves, that destroys sinful activities like fire burns out the deadfall at the bottom of the bamboo grove, all the dead leaves and everything. But the shoots are under the ground and things comes back up again. But this kevalya bhaktya, kevala bhakti, this does it like nihana eva bhaskara, like the sun burns off the fog. In the morning, you notice that the fog is there in the valleys and places, the low lying places anyway. When the sun comes up, then the fog's burned away. It's gone. Doesn't come back. Not with the sunlight there. So Prabhupada translates this, only a rare person who has adopted complete unalloyed devotional service to Krishna can uproot the weeds of sinful actions with no possibility that they will revive. He can do this simply by discharging devotional service, just as the sun can immediately dissipate fog by its rays. So that's the answer to the question. How does all sinful reactions become completely destroyed without the chance of their coming back? That is, even totally, so that there won't be any sinful desires by unalloyed devotional service. Nevertheless, to perform this unalloyed devotional service, tapas is necessary, because to be unalloyed means, includes tapas, is there. Because the complete concentration of the senses and the mind on one activity, that one activity has to be devotional service. That's what it means by unalloyed. It's not mixed. An alloy means you take iron and you mix it with other things. The unalloyed means there's no mixture of anything. So that has to take place. So we should be striving always for tapasya, for tapas, for austerity. Then there's, of course, this discussion in the Bhagavad Gita of austerity, in the penultimate chapter, chapter 17. First of all, they should not be, should sacrifice, austerity and charity should not be given up. And then he describes them. Austerity of here they're described as threefold of body, mind, and words. Sariram tapa uchate, what's said to be the austerity of the body, tapa, is the certain worship. Deva, Dvija, Guru, Prajna, Pujanam. The puja of the Supreme Lord, the Dvija, the Brahmanas, the Guru, the spiritual master, and Prajna, superiors like the father and the mother. This is austerity of the body, and also saucham, cleanliness, taking bath three times a day, even if it's bad for your hair. Saucham, cleanliness. Of course, there's also internal cleanliness. Arjavam means, arjavam means straight, literally. That is to say, not crooked or simple, simplicity. There's a difference between simplicity and simple-mindedness. It means freedom from duplicity. So Arjavam, Brahmacharya is listed here. Brahmacharya. Ahimsa, non-violence. These are austerities pertaining to the body. Prabhupada says, the Supreme Godhead here explains the different kinds of austerity and penance. First, he explains the austerities and penances practiced by the body. One should offer or learn to offer respect to God or to the demigods, the perfect qualified brahmanas, and the spiritual master, and superiors like father, mother, or any person who is conversant with Vedic knowledge. Superiors like father and mothers are supposed to be conversant with Vedic knowledge. If they're not, you still offer them respect, but you don't take instruction from them, certain items. These should be given proper respect. One should practice cleansing oneself externally and internally, and he should learn to become simple in behavior. Arjavam. He should not do anything which is not sanctioned by scriptural injunctions. He should not indulge in sex outside of marriage, for sex is sanctioned in the scriptures only in marriage, not otherwise. This is called celibacy. These are the penances and austerities as far as the body is concerned. In the sixth chapter, Prabhupada discusses celibacy. He talks about the also celibacy in marriage life. Because in any way, for success in any yoga process, celibacy is required. And if you want to be successful in devotional service, this is in devotional service. It's so powerful that grihasthas can practice it. If you actually want to practice jnana yoga or astanga yoga, you can only do it if you're a brahmachari. If you're married, you need not apply. But if bhakti yoga, because he says there is the what Prabhupada calls the household of brahmachari, that is, who only engages in sex for procreation and by following garbhadhana samskara, then that's also considered celibacy, brahmacharya. So that's austerity of the body, worship of the worshipful persons, cleanliness, simplicity, brahmacharya, and non-violence. Then, austerity of the speech. Anuvega karam vakyam satyam priyahitam chayat swadhyaya vyasanam chaiva vanmayam tapa uchite. Austerity of speech consists in speaking words that are truthful, satyam, pleasing, anuvega karam, beneficial, not agitating to others. It's anuvega karam, priyas is sweet and pleasing, and also regularly reciting the Vedic literature. But here's always a problem, how to be truthful at the same time pleasing and not agitating to others. Because people always, when they say, okay, I'm going to speak truthfully now, they mean they're going to agitate your mind or say something that's not pleasing. Always disliked you. Do you know what a creep you are? It's considered the virtue of truthfulness. But that's also not austere. One should not speak in such a way as to agitate the minds of others. Of course, when a teacher speaks, he can speak the truth for the instruction of his students, but such a teacher should not speak to those who are not his students if he will agitate their minds. This has sometimes been a fault of devotees, especially in the early days, is to teach people things that they are not willing to hear, and also in a brutal way. You have to learn how to speak truthfully, but also in such a way that people will actually listen, not that they'll be so repelled by your obnoxious and aggressive behavior that they'll just go away. Besides that, one should not talk nonsense. The process of speaking in spiritual circles is to say something upheld by the scriptures. One should at once quote from scriptural authority to back up what he is saying. At the same time, such talk should be very pleasurable to the ear. By such discussions, one may derive the highest benefit and elevate human society. There is limitless stock of Vedic literature, and one should study this. This is called penance of speech. So life will be much improved by the practice of this austerity of speech. So dhyaya, abhyasanam, the practice of Vedic study, so that what you say, what you speak will be authorized or not nonsense. Then the austerities of the mind. Mana prasada somyatvam maunam atma vinigraha bhava samshuddhir iti etat tapo manasam uchate. And satisfaction, that is mana prasada, satisfaction of the mind. Somyatva, being without duplicity toward others, or simplicity. Notice how that shows up arjavam, in your behavior and in your mind also. Maunam, gravity, silence, mental silence. Atma vinigraha, self-control. And bhava samshuddhi, purification of one's existence or of one's own nature. This is, these are the austerities of the mind, tapa manasam. Prabhupada says, to make the mind austere is to detach it from sense gratification. Somewhere Prabhupada describes the mind, in the Bhagavad Gita, I think, as the repository, that is to say, the warehouse of all ideas of sense gratification. That's where they're collected and stored up. It's full of memories of sense gratification. The association of objects in the world with sense gratification, the association of the senses with sense gratification. So the mind has to be taken away from this preoccupation. It should be so trained that it can be always thinking of doing good for others. So as far as what should I be doing, or what should be my contemplation, the mind, the untrained mind, is always thinking of what will we do next to gratify the senses. Here is the modern mind. It is situated on a sofa. Before it is a very large television set. And the television set gets 130 channels. And the mind is going with the remote. So basically, that's the way the whole material world is viewed, is what will we gratify our sense. As soon as we get tired of this one, let's go on to the next one. As soon as we get tired of this one, let's go on to the next one. Because one is easily bored and distracted, so it keeps on going. And so what the mind is thinking of, the untrained mind is thinking of, what will I do next for sense gratification? What we should be thinking of, what can I do next to do good to others? Which is to say, to give them Krishna consciousness. We should be do-gooders, it's a fact. But our platform for doing good to others is to actually really help them. The best training for the mind is gravity in thought. Now, the word gravity, to be grave, is usually spoken of, usually thought of as referring to speech. That you do not necessarily blurt out everything that's in your mind. Silence, mono, that's already mentioned somewhere as austerity of the. Of the, oh no, it's here, an austerity of the mind. Mono means silence. So it also means you should not think of unnecessary things. It's control of the mind. Gravity in speech means you don't speak any more than necessary. What you say is actually relevant to the point, beneficial, it's your form. And all the ideas that flood into your head that are not of any use whatsoever, you don't blurt them out. Now this is now considered unhealthy, I think. People are... The biggest fad for the last few years in literature is everyone writing their memoirs and publishing them. Lives best forgotten are now broadcast to the whole world, and people on websites their weblog is out there, so they're telling everybody everything about themselves. And it's just useless chit-chat. I've seen some of these, you know. Well, I got up this morning and it was the same, you know. Same old day. And then every idea or thought that pops into your uncontrolled head, you have to share it with everybody else. So almost everybody is boring. The word is out, and one reason psychoanalysis, to be a psychoanalyst, is so difficult, is psychoanalysis has prompted this idea where the patient is supposed to sit and lay on a couch and free associate, tell everything that comes into his mind. And according to those people that practice it, beginning with Sigmund Freud, the real thing is most people are totally uninteresting. And even when you get down to the depths, there's still nothing significant going on. and so everybody's into this. And then, of course, to make themselves interesting, they do stupid, foolish things. So it's a history of folly and stupidity, near-death experiences. If they can manage them and survive them, so they can have something to talk about. So a lot of these memoirs are about, you know, how I nearly died of drugs, and what stupid things I did to nearly kill me and destroy me, and now I'm coming back, and so on. What would people do without this destruction? Flirting with destruction, to be interesting or interested even in their own lives. Of course, people are bored with their own lives too. So this is, one should not only not speak all the nonsense, but one should not think it. This is gravity in thought. If you want to have something interesting to say and something interesting to report, that should be in connection with Krishna consciousness. And those things that are your adventures, personal adventures in advancing in Krishna consciousness, that should be shared, because that can help and encourage other people. Or your adventures in preaching Krishna consciousness, that should be shared. We have two tasks. One is to become Krishna conscious. Two, and to give Krishna consciousness to others. These are our two concerns. And any sharing of thoughts about those things is interesting to other people. And it's interesting to other people. At this point, you can talk about yourself also. Because then when you talk about yourself, that's called realized knowledge, and it's interesting. There, when I joined the movement, there was a ban in Back to Godhead about writing about yourselves. So Or you'd read back to Godhead magazine and the article would start. As defined in the Oxford English Dictionary, the word God means, you know, immediately falling asleep. You know. So I started writing from Back to Godhead. I decided I was going to write about, you know, if I wanted to make a, of course I want to make a preaching point, but I introduced the first person singular into this. Immediately became more interesting to other people, even though you're writing sort of about yourself. At least it's about yourself in relationship to Krishna consciousness, which is your real and true self, which is okay. And then it becomes interesting to people. So there has to be some personal interest in this matter. That's okay. But it should be in relationship to Krishna. If anything about yourself is not in relationship to Krishna, it's not really worth telling. It's not. Once you practice ultimately gravity and thought, in the previous one, one of the austerities in speech is the study of the Vedas. One's thinking, if you look at Prabhupada's thinking as exhibited in his writings, you can see that Prabhupada thinks in shlokas. And many times his lectures or his writings, he's really going from one verse to the next. And if you start to know more and more of the Vedas, you can see exactly how he's doing this. There are many places where he's quoting or citing or expounding on a particular text, and he doesn't mention what text it is. But if you begin to understand it, you can see that he thinks in shlokas. It's certainly not like some mechanical parroting or repetition, because this is where he's focused in this way. This is life. This is gravity and thought. One should not deviate from Krishna consciousness and must always avoid sense gratification. To purify one's nature is to become Krishna consciousness. This is, what is it called? Bhava Samsudhiya. Purification of one's nature. Samsudhiya. Satisfaction of the mind, that's the first thing. Mana prasad. Satisfaction of the mind. Satisfaction of the mind can be obtained only by taking the mind away from thoughts of sense enjoyment. The more we think of sense enjoyment, the more the mind becomes dissatisfied. See, these people don't understand this. They want peace, but they're always restless, because when the appetite for sense gratification is there, and one is in the enjoying mood, there is no satisfaction. This is the nature of the mode of passion. Even if you satisfy your senses in one way, the general agitation for sense gratification continues, and now you have to go satisfy your senses in another way. As soon as you get sick of one thing, the next thing comes on. So therefore, there will be no satisfaction, there will be no peace by this method. This is the great secret that, as Krishna says, that people happiness doesn't come from sense gratification, but rather from controlling the senses. Just the opposite of what people think. Happiness or satisfaction or peace of mind. We have a little bit of time here. Let me finish this purport. The more we think of sense enjoyment, the more the mind becomes dissatisfied. In the present age, we unnecessarily engage the mind in so many different ways for sense gratification, so there is no possibility of the mind's becoming satisfied. See, the mind is where you live. That's your environment. So what arrangement do people made to make their mind a peaceful, clean, nice place to live. No, it's totally hellish. Even they have a house and all this other stuff that looks okay. When you find out where they really live their mind, it's disgusting. And they're very unhappy. And if you make your mind a fit place to live in, then if everything else is not going well, you're still okay. So how people don't know this. The mind is the environment. The best course is to divert the mind. Divert it from what? Divert it from sense gratification. To divert the mind to the Vedic literature, which is full of satisfying stories, as in the Purana and the Mahabharata. Because the mind needs variety, that's a fact. So it's not that the Vedic literature is not full of variety. There's plenty of it. Because Krishna's full of variety. One can take advantage of this knowledge and thus become purified. The mind should be devoid of duplicity and one should think of the welfare of all. Silence means that one is always thinking of self-realization. He returns to this gravity of thought. The person in Krishna consciousness observes perfect silence in this sense. Control of the mind means detaching the mind from sense gratification. One should be straightforward in his dealings and therefore purify his existence. All these qualities together constitute austerity and mental activities. Those has to be done. This threefold austerity should be performed in this way, in the mode of goodness, that is, for the sake of the Supreme Lord, and not for any material benefit. Any questions about austerity? So, happiness, satisfaction, peace of mind, all the things that everybody wanted come from austerity. Not from indulgence. But people, the things that everyone is doing right now to make themselves happy, they're actually making themselves, by their very effort, more unhappy. What will be the result? We agree that one should become happy. There's no argument. But people don't know that austerity leads to happiness. They think austerity leads to misery. If it's imposed upon you unwillingly from other people, But if it's because Prabhupada another place defines austerity as the voluntary acceptance. One has to understand this and take it up voluntarily, and then it will become happy. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.